This is White Sox Weekly, your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Welcome in, White Sox Weekly. Connor McKnight has the call of the game today, coming your way around 1 o'clock this afternoon. First pitch, 1:10. White Sox taking on the Pittsburgh Pirates, the second game in a weekend series ahead of the All-Star break. 1:10, your first pitch. Pre-game coming up, 12:30. Right now, Shane Orling sitting in. White Sox Weekly from Guaranteed Rate Field, a beautiful late morning here in Chicago. A little humid, a little hot, but a wonderful day to get out and enjoy some baseball. If you're on your way to the ballpark, great weather for you to enjoy game two, White Sox and Pirates. Game one last night, the White Sox lost 4-1. And after the third inning, White Sox took a quick 1-0 lead off the bat of Luis Robert. He's been quite good since coming back from injury. That was all the White Sox could muster, though, just the one run in the third inning. And Jonathan Cannon, who came in a quick relief for Garrett Crochet, surrendered three runs in that game. And White Sox eventually take the loss 4-1 to the Pirates. An interesting kind of development in the game last night. Garrett Crochet pitching what is his final start before the All-Star break, named an American League All-Star this year. Congratulations to him. His first selection will be a big moment for him when he takes the mound in the All-Star game on Tuesday. On questions if he could be the starter, last night pitched just two innings, no hits, no runs, no walks, four strikeouts on 28 pitches, 22 of them strikes. The shortened outing, obviously very short at two innings alone, in part for preserving his arm for that All-Star game on the chance that he could be named All-Star starter for the American League. No official naming yet on who will start the All-Star game for the AL. Obviously some good names near the top: Corbin Burns, the Baltimore Oriole, Tarek Skubal, the Detroit Tiger, and right now Cy Young favorite. But if you look at some of the statistics, especially the advanced analytics, Garrett Crochet actually tracks ahead of all of them, currently leading Major League Baseball in pitching war, if you ask Fangraphs, at 3.9. It has been an outstanding season for the young Garrett Crochet, who had the Tommy John surgery and things to kind of derail what was his career as a young prospect coming up through the system. One of the more promising guys finally delivering. And when you look at the win-loss record for this White Sox team, it can be difficult to find those bright spots, find those beacons of positivity. The starting pitching has been one of them, and it's been talked about a lot on the broadcasts lately. These starting pitchers, when you think about Garrett Crochet and Eric Fetty, they've been excellent. And Crochet, especially near the top of baseball, potential Cy Young contender, maybe not a betting favorite in the American League for reasons outside of his performance. Obviously, the trade deadline coming up may have some impact on that. But Garrett Crochet, where he is right now, is pitching like he is the best pitcher in baseball. Maybe non-Paul Skeens division. More on that in a moment as the Pittsburgh Pirates are here. White Sox fortunately won't have to face Paul Skeens this weekend. But Garrett Crochet has been in that conversation. He's been among the best in Major League Baseball when it comes to starting pitchers. It was no different yesterday, even with the shortened two-inning appearance ahead of the All-Star game. So hoping for Garrett Crochet that he can potentially be named the American League starting pitcher in the All-Star game, more than deserves it. Statistically, like I said, the best in Major League Baseball by wins above replacement at Fangraphs. That is not an easy thing to do. There have been some excellent pitching performances out of starters this season in a year where hitting feels impossible. Almost historical lows across the board in categories like batting average and OPS. Guys striking out a ton as they have the past few years. Baseball moves forward in the analytics era of strikeouts and home runs you can live with. Strikeouts are okay as long as it's supplemented by power. It has resulted in lower ERAs across the board. And Crochet's found himself among the best. 3.02 ERA as he ends his first half, a stellar campaign. White Sox taking on the Pirates again today, game two of the series. And like I mentioned, they won't face the young phenom, Paul Skenes, who has been incredible. And while we hope Garrett Crochet can be named the American League starter, Paul Skenes, the rookie, was named the National League starter in the All-Star game on Tuesday. And he's only the fifth rookie in Major League history to start the All-Star game. I was looking at the leaderboards for wins above replacement. If he were qualified, he's not. He's only started 11 games. But if Paul Skenes had started, say, seven more and were a qualified starting pitcher by innings pitched, most of the guys have 18, 19 starts. Skenes, like I said, sits at 11. If he were qualified, he would already rank sixth in baseball in wins above replacement as a rookie. Kid who's made 11 starts as a 1.9 ERA. He's striking out 12 batters per nine innings. One of only two pitchers in Major League history to have outings where he's gone six no-hit innings with 11 strikeouts. The other is Nolan Ryan. What he's doing is almost mythology. And he's doing it as a rookie. He's doing it with all of this billing as this phenom kind of pitcher. We've seen this before in other sports, certainly in baseball, absolutely, where phenoms get that billing. The cover of Sports Illustrated, hello Bryce Harper. Mike Trout received it to a lesser degree. Steven Strasburg, you remember, was Paul Skenes before Paul Skenes. His first outing with the Washington Nationals was a moment where it felt like the earth stood still. Everybody stopped what they were doing so that they could see Steven Strasburg debut for the Nationals. He was stellar. And Strasburg is also a reminder that there's a chance this is lightning in a bottle. Obviously, the hope is it isn't. But Steven Strasburg had an almost equally dominant first 12 starts as Paul Skenes has had with the Pirates when Strasburg was a rookie with the Nationals. And unfortunately, injuries kind of derailed what Strasburg was tracking to be. But Skenes is in that territory, if not more so. It has been one of the most dominant 11-game stretches by a rookie we have ever seen. And I want to talk about this a little more later on in the show. Welcome your input, 312-332-3776. But for me, if Paul Skenes can continue to do what he has done, again, a 1.9 ERA, the lowest ERA by a starting pitcher in all of baseball right now. In fact, only two, Paul Skenes and the American League Cy Young favorite Tarek Skubal, sit under 2.4. Now, Skubal, that was entering yesterday. He gave up two runs to the Dodgers. That may have changed. Paul Skenes could be the only pitcher in baseball with an ERA under 2.4 as we approach the All-Star break, and he's a rookie. It's unimaginable to think of what this kid could be if he continues on the track that he's on, develops into somehow being better than the best. It's been an incredible thing to watch. There is the one hand. The White Sox won't have to face him, and for that we are thankful. Easier at bats this weekend against the Pittsburgh Pirates. On the other hand, we don't get to see Paul Skenes in our ballpark. A little bit of a missed opportunity, it feels like, there, maybe for White Sox fans who won't see this young phenom pitcher on the mound this weekend at the rate. Sox fans, as a reminder, if you're a 90s music fan, join us at the ballpark Friday, July 26th for 90s night, presented by Guaranteed Rate. The Sox take on the Mariners. It's a 7:10 first pitch, and be sure to stay after the game for a post-game fireworks show. You can purchase tickets at whitesox.com/ promos. White Sox Weekly continues next. Connor McKnight will join me in the booth for a conversation. Excited for that. It's all coming up next on White Sox Weekly. White Sox Weekly continuing. Connor McKnight joining us shortly. And Sox fans, take advantage of one of our best offers this summer. Get one ticket and two beers to select games starting at $19 with Miller Lite Baseball and Brews. Must be 21 and over with a valid ID to purchase tickets. Visit whitesox.com/brews. I was talking a little bit in our last segment about the starting pitching, the fact that it's been better. And it continues to be one of the bright spots, obviously anchored by Garrett Crochet and Eric Fetty when you look at this White Sox team. And it can be difficult with the win-loss record to find those bright spots. But it is a reminder that the White Sox have done a good job lately of developing starting pitching, of finding and creating elite starting pitchers. You think of a guy like Dylan Cease, obviously not here anymore, but found him in a trade and were able to develop him into a Cy Young contender, happening again with Garrett Crochet. So that is a reminder that the White Sox and their pitching staff have done a good job with starting pitchers, as Connor McKnight joins me in the booth. Connor,
hi, Jay.
What's going on?
A pleasure, my friend. Good to see you. I see you've got the windows open here in booth number six. That's an uncommon occurrence when it's as humid as it is right now. But hey, it's your show. You get to be comfortable as you want.
I spent the last week of my life about in New Orleans, and it was sweltering.
Yeah.
So sitting up here now, this is almost cool to me.
This is like a relaxing sauna and, for you.
You know, I keep being surprised to hear that the windows aren't always open for this.
They
I get
not.
In the booth at a ballpark. I want the windows open.
I want
the feel.
Maybe we're jaded. Maybe Brendan and I are jaded
a little bit.
You know, we get up here, we work every day, and we keep the windows closed. We keep it nice and frosty in here. You're right. You're probably right. But it is a beautiful day at the ballpark, humidity aside.
I am starting to sweat, and I'm thinking about the fact we've got some time until first pitch. The windows, Brendan may be thankful, may close here shortly.
No one is going to hold it against you if you take a little breather here in the AC.
I can't decide if I have to commit to the bit and keep them open at this point.
This is like one of those days. I'm glad that radio hosts don't go through the same thing that starting pitchers do, because you're looking at a two-jersey, three-jersey show.
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about?
Like, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, if you're working, this is with the jerseys that we haven't fixed yet in Major League Baseball. You sweat through it. It starts to look a different color than the pants. You'd have to change two or three times. At least I would. I mean, it's steamy in here.
At least we get to hide up in this booth. Nobody has to worry too much about seeing us sweat through a shirt.
It's a good place to hide.
No camera on me. I'm on the radio still. Connor, short outing for Garrett Crochet yesterday. Just the two innings.
Yeah.
That all to keep his arm ready for potentially starting the All-Star Game Tuesday?
It is. It was planned. You know, Garrett knew that going in, that it was probably going to be around that two-inning mark. He pitched well. And you could kind of see it in that last batter. He revved it up a little bit, threw a beautiful cutter in that appearance too, in that particular plate appearance. You can kind of tell that he knew that was going to – there was a chance to finish with a flourish, and he did. Pedro and the White Sox have pointed out a number of times, and they're right about this. This is unprecedented, right? Nobody has gone from where Garrett was to where Garrett is now in terms of an innings load, performance, production, all the things. So it is kind of uncharted territory and something that they've got to balance. And listen, let's be honest about things. If the White Sox choose to trade Garrett Crochet, then what they needed to do was pitch him in the first half of the season so teams could see where Garrett is.
Absolutely.
If they start slowly and build up and then taper down, kind of like a bell curve or whatever, they are not maximizing the value for that player if that's something they choose to do. And then there's Garrett himself, right? I think people are really quick to forget the player involved in this. This is a guy who stood up for himself, who slammed the table and said, listen, I want to be a starter.
Yeah.
I can do this. And they gave him as much leash as he could. Garrett himself has said, I kind of thought I'd be opening in spring training and then kind of probably start the year in AAA. And there it is, opening day start, and he's one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. So you have to consider that guy as well, and there's a really difficult balance of the carrot and the stick, right? How much do you reward the player?
Yeah.
How much do you make sure? And in this case, the stick isn't like any discipline. It's making sure that that pitch count and that innings load is, as best as you can figure, appropriate, right? And what I think has been really impressive for this in this endeavor has been the White Sox use of the advanced metrics, right, the biomechanics, all the computer science-y nerd stuff,
yeah.
and Garrett's feedback himself, right? Are you feeling strong? Is the arsenal there? Is that fastball popping? All that kind of stuff. And, you know, last night he came out there and the first couple of heaters were 95, 96.
Yeah.
And that's great velocity for a lot. That's not where Garrett usually is. And that start against the Marlins where they fouled off a bunch, he was 97, 98. It was some of the best velocity yeah. he's had in a start this year. And yet wasn't quite getting around where he wanted to get around. They had a good game plan against him. So it was something we kind of watched, you know, as that those two innings kind of unfurled. Velocity got up there later. You know, it was right where he wants to be. And it keeps him in line with starting or potentially starting the All-Star game and definitely pitching in it, which, again, you know, you talk about carrot and sticks. Let the guy start pitching the All-Star game.
I mean, it would make
Why
no
would you
sense
not?
To do anything to derail that. It's
no
his
doubt.
First opportunity.
No
it's
doubt.
Going to be a memorable moment
and,
for him.
And you think about this, the storylines here in 2024 for the White Sox, regardless of where things end up going as we get to the trade deadline, as a front office, as a coaching staff, as a player development staff,
absolutely.
You get to say, we took Garrett Crochet, and credit to Garrett, but put him in the All-Star game, got him to pitch. Like, look around. That is going to impact what the White Sox are able to do from an outside-in perspective when it comes to pitching next year.
And this has not been an infrequent occurrence lately.
No.
I mean, you think about what
yeah.
they took Dylan Cease and turned him into, albeit briefly, in Chicago. Eric Fetty coming from the Korean League mm-hmm. to here and having the same or similar success
yeah.
that he had over there. It just, this, as an organization, it feels like if there's anything this team does really well, it's develop starting pitching.
Yeah, it has for a long time. You know, I worked with, I was doing the pre and post game show when Don Cooper was the White Sox pitching coach years ago, and Coop had a reputation, you know, for a little while there, 4 or 5 years, as one of the best pitching coaches in all of baseball, right? I mean, he was coveted, he was sought after, he stayed here, and was a big part of the reason guys like John Garland and Gavin Floyd, and you know, the list goes on, Freddie Garcia, all of them kind of came to be what they would be while with the White Sox. And that's meaningful. It's an organizational identity that matters. And listen, in this day and age, obviously developing hitting is important. And that's something the White Sox need to prove to themselves.
Yep.
And it's something they need to get better at. They've talked about that. Mike Shirley talked the other day, the White Sox director of player development and amateur scouting. He's got the fifth pick in the draft, and it sounds like it's going to be a hitter. And that's going to be an important kind of pivotal piece yeah. of this next year and a half, next 3 years, when you think about the player's development in of its own self. They've got to prove that that can happen too. But while they do that, they've got guys at AA moving to AAA, moving to the major leagues,
yep.
whose development curves are really in a nice place. Now, whether all those guys turn into, you know, twos and threes in a major league rotation, who could say? But you're still loaded up with a lot of guys that, if they fail as starters, could still be impact arms in the bullpen or benefit other franchises and acquire what you might need.
I think another thing for fans is when you have a season going the way this one is and you sit here at the end of the first half, obviously not the exact midway point, but with the All-Star break pending.
Right.
It can be difficult when you look at the wins and losses to have any type of positive evaluation.
Yes.
But I look at the evaluation of Chris Getz in his first full season as a general manager. You brought up what he's done with Crochet. We have to pitch him. We have to maximize him in the first half, because if we do make that decision to move on from him, people have to see him and we have to get the most we can. Well, worked out pretty well. He
yeah.
leads baseball in pitching wins above replacement. So that strategy has worked. I think when you look at guys like Eric Fetty or the kind of low-risk options they went out and acquired this past offseason that have played well, it feels like Getz has managed this first year kind of brilliantly. He set himself up to have a sale deadline where he doesn't have to give up a lot long term, and he can get a lot back.
Yeah, that's the hope. I think you're right to point out that some of the short-term buys that Chris Getz made are set up to pay dividends back early on here. There have been, you know, steps along the way that probably haven't worked out the way they have liked, right? The Mike Clevenger signing was to give some innings and all that other kind of stuff. Injuries are injuries, right? Well, and that happens.
Nobody bats a thousand.
No.
You can't win every hand at the blackjack table. But if you win most of them, you make money.
I think that's right. And I think where this team is set up at the deadline is advantageous in this particular season, too. Because I know you know, you look at the National League.
Everybody's buying.
If you're breathing, you're buying.
Yep.
Right? Unless you're the Marlins or the Rockies, and that's another story.
But they might not be breathing.
Yeah, they might not be breathing. and who knows? The Rockies, like, listen, if the Marlins have made a trade already with Luis Arias going to San Diego, and they may have Tanner Scott, one of the best relief arms on the market, I don't know if the Rockies are aware that the trade deadline exists and whether they want to actually make moves. They usually don't. So that takes one potential seller off the market and hopefully benefits the White Sox. You know, one of the things we talk about in this town a lot is, you know, the Chicago Cubs. They had been sliding in the standings here,
suddenly
potentially becoming a buyer. Now they played pretty well, and Kyle Hendricks pitched last night like it's 2016 again.
Yep.
So that's good for the White Sox in that perhaps it's one more team that wants to buy as opposed to sell, which makes what you have more enticing to everybody else. It's going to be a fascinating, fascinating trade deadline. And we talked about it last week on the show. I don't think that Robert or Crochet get traded at this particular deadline.
Okay.
I think all of the factors that make it a difficult move probably push the White Sox to make those trades if they choose to do it in the offseason, in this winter. What could make me wrong is the fact that you've got top-tier teams like the Dodgers and the Orioles and the Phillies who just say, the hell with it. We're going for it.
Yeah.
And then that means the prospects that they're going to get in return, the top-tier talents, they're going to come back. And I would imagine that they're going to be closer to Major League ready. That's as good a position as any, considering the White Sox have been horrible in terms of wins and loss. It's as good a position as any as you could ask to be in at this point in July.
I mean, the Orioles and the Phillies stand out to me differently than the Dodgers do. You think about the Dodgers spend so much of their resources on the Major League club.
Yeah.
A lot of logjam when it comes to their prospects. The Phillies just have a GM in Dave Dombrowski who's consistently willing to, we're going to get rid of everything and try to win. And the Orioles, it feels like, have hit enough on their young guys. They built so well through the farm. Gunnar Henderson, Heston Kjerstad, they've all panned out pretty well.
Yeah.
Now we can mortgage some of that to get a starter.
And there's still more in that system for the Orioles as well. I said this when, as we were talking about the Dylan Cease trade of it all coming into spring training, I would love to pry some of that talent from the Orioles. And I think given where they're at and the Yankees kind of falling back some too now, I think they're more enticed than ever to make some of those trades. It will cost them to get either Crochet or Robert. The cost is going to be very high.
Connor, thank you for joining us here in the booth.
Always a pleasure. Look forward to the pregame show.
Looking forward to your call of the game.
Thanks, man.
1:10 first pitch. White Sox Pirates getting set for game two. White Sox Weekly continues next. White Sox Weekly. I always love talking with Connor McKnight. He'll have the call of the game today, 1 o'clock. First pitch, Pirates and White Sox coming your way around 1:10 as we get set for game two this weekend series ahead of the All-Star break. Sox fans new this season, take advantage of savings all summer long with our summer savings section. Enjoy select lower level tickets for $15 on all weekday games and $20 on all weekend games while supplies last. Excludes the Cubs series. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. Something interesting has made its way into the national conversation in Major League Baseball yesterday as we pause 10 seconds for station identification. Nationally, a lot of conversation this week has been spent on how starting pitchers are managed, particularly when said starting pitcher has a no-hitter late into a game. If you missed it, this week, Paul Skeens was on the mound and had another one of his stellar outings. He set a franchise record for consecutive starts with seven or more strikeouts as a Pittsburgh Pirate, as a rookie. He was on the hill, seven innings, 11 strikeouts, no hits, and was pulled with 99 pitches. And the eighth inning, bullpen gave up a hit, no hitter over, no for Paul Skeens or for the Pirates. And it sparked a kind of broad national debate that I found particularly interesting, and I'd love to hear from you on 312-332-3776, the phone number if you'd like to join this conversation, where people were talking about if it's okay or if it, you like it as a fan for a manager to yank a starting pitcher in the middle of a no-hitter. And I'm not talking like Garrett Crochet last night would technically qualify, two innings, no hits, four strikeouts, but there were other plans in place. There were other factors that led to Garrett was not going to go the full distance in that start. It was never a part of the plan. It was always going to be a short outing, preserve his arm, give him a chance to pitch in the All-Star game, and don't tax him too much as we get ready for the break. But with it, with Paul Skeens, and it's happened multiple times this year, the Cubs had an incident with Ben Brown where they pulled him mid-no-hitter. It's now happened with Paul Skeens, this phenom garnering all of this attention, being pulled in the seventh inning of a no-hitter. It's actually happened to Paul Skeens twice this season, in the sixth inning at Wrigley Field against the Cubs with a no-hitter. Paul Skeens was relieved. Now, in that outing, he had significantly more pitches. Strikeout stuff was working, but he'd given up a lot of foul contact, and the pitch count was not sustainable for Skeens to go a full nine. But 99 pitches through seven, if you rewind 10 years, that's not a lot. There was a time where 99 pitches through seven with no hits, boy, you were on an efficient pace to get through this thing and finish the job. Anymore, nobody even gets the opportunity. In fact, I believe Ronel Blanco, the Houston Astro, has the only no-hitter in Major League Baseball this season, which leads me to my question. And I'll tell you my answer, and you can tell me yours. 312-332-3776. Do you miss the no-hitter? Because I don't. It's not something that I find myself pining for when I'm watching a baseball game. I understand the romanticism of it. But I think about a guy like Paul Skeens and a guy like Steven Strasburg. And not that the two things have to correlate, where if Paul Skeens is left in to attempt a no-hitter, it means his career will be derailed. But I think about those guys who are allowed to throw 120, 130 pitches for so long, and now in the era of maximum effort, where you don't have pitchers anymore who come out and go the first few innings 92, 93 with the fastball before ramping it up to 96, 97 as they get later into their outing. Everything's maximum effort, especially for a guy like Paul Skeens, who averages nearly triple digits with his fastball. I'm more hopeful that we'll see a lengthy and effective career than one moment in his rookie season. And in fact, two moments in his rookie season when you consider he's been pulled from a no-hitter twice. But just looking at the landscape of all of baseball, Paul Skeens isn't the only guy that this has happened to. Guys are being pulled in the midst of no-hitters left and right. It feels like every other no-hitter we see in baseball is a combined no-hitter. We could have a conversation about that if we want as well. If that even counts, if it's the same category as a starting pitcher going nine innings, giving up no hits versus a starting pitcher going nine innings and the bullpen, or a starting pitcher going six innings and the bullpen finishes the job in the seventh, eighth, and ninth, you get the combo no hitter. Is it the same category? But a part of why I don't miss it is it felt like it was getting so common. And it felt like a little bit of the romanticism of a no-hitter had been removed. And often, in these events, like Paul Skenes in the seventh inning the other day, had a difficult time finding the strike zone. And if you throw him out there in a 1-0 game in the eighth inning, and he's up at 105, 106, 107 in the pitch count, and loses control further, you don't only put him in jeopardy at going that maximum of an effort at that volume of pitches. You also put your game in jeopardy. And the Pittsburgh Pirates are in a position where they need to win if they want to be able to sell that they can buy at the trade deadline and supplement this outstanding pitcher they've found in Skenes, who will start the All-Star game. I don't think the moment of a no-hitter is worth risking those things long-term as a fan. And I wonder if I'm alone in that. Because so much of what I heard nationally was, you've robbed baseball of a classic moment. We don't have it anymore. It's one of those things growing up that so-and-so threw a no-hitter, and you'd stop and go, I want to see the highlights. I want to see the strikeouts. I want to see. There was always a big play. The Matt Cain perfect game. I think it was Angel Pagan, maybe. Somebody had an incredible diving catch in the outfield to preserve it, seventh, eighth inning. There's always, or even better example, Mark Burley and the catch at the wall in his perfect game here at the Rate. There's always that moment, that incredible play defensively, or massive number of strikeouts, or for whatever reason, it's a special kind of perfect game no-hitter. And so many people seem to feel like the sport has been robbed because this analytic forward pitcher safety era, it doesn't allow it to happen anymore. I don't feel that way. I would prefer that we more effectively manage pitchers. I mean, in all the conversation around Paul Skenes, I've had the take that he could be one of the most dominant rookies we've ever seen. A lot of people have brought up, we haven't seen a rookie pitcher this dominant maybe since Fidrich back in 1976, whatever year it was. I believe Fidrich threw 29 perfect games, and he had incredibly short, or 29 complete games, not perfect, complete games, and he had a very short career. And you think about guys who were out there throwing nine innings 29 times in a season. It's going to shorten the career. You're asking maximum effort out of these pitchers. I would prefer to see them pulled in no-hitters if they're at the threshold of their maximum ability, rather than continue to run them out and risk shortening their careers. It doesn't seem like the payoff of a singular moment of a no-hitter is worth the potential risk. So I want to know from you, if you disagree with me completely, 312-332-3776, and you do miss the no-hitter, we can take some of your calls on that as White Sox Weekly continues. You're listening to White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network, ESPN 1000. White Sox Weekly continues. Shane Orling sitting in for Connor McKnight on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network. Pre-game 12:30. First pitch 1:10, game 2, White Sox and Pirates from the Rate. Join us at the ballpark on Sunday, July 28th. For Christmas in July, receive a Christmas-themed ornament when you purchase a specially priced ticket. Limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Joining me now, from Future Sox, the managing editor and podcast co-host, James Fox, wants to talk draft. If you're unaware, the MLB draft is tomorrow. White Sox picking fifth. And James, everywhere you look, I mean, they're putting the word pivotal up in banners around the ballpark, it feels like. Pivotal is all you can hear about this draft.
Yeah, it seems to be the talking point that Mike Shirley used. Shay, good to be with you. I mean, it's really important, but you know, they don't have a great history in rounds after the first round, obviously. But, I mean, picking at 43, 68, 78, they have five of the first 107. I mean, it's a really important draft. It's not a great draft. But, you know, we'll see what they do at five and then what they're able to do after, obviously.
So you mentioned it's not a great draft. It's interesting because I've heard Steve Stone talk about the draft on the TV side, on the broadcast, mentioning the top 15-ish players are really good. After that, it falls off a cliff. What's your kind of evaluation, and how deep is this first round? What's the likelihood that the White Sox can come away with a high-level talent?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, I think if you're picking right up until 15, you feel okay. I mean, the White Sox should get a good player. The issue is, like, just on the whole, it's just a lot of college corner profiles, you know, Shay. It's not a great prep draft. So, you know, usually you want shortstops and center fielders up at the top, and that's just not what this draft class has provided. So, you know, you might get some valuable players, but it's first base, left field, right field, mostly college bats. You know, there's a couple of college pitchers at the top. So the prep pitching class is really, really good and strong, but, you know, that's the one demographic that most teams are afraid of taking really high. So that's where this thing could be really haywire. You know, I think, like, we know, like, the top 10 players, but, you know, in a baseball draft, it's all about bonus pool and money. So if this thing is really crazy tomorrow night, it wouldn't be that surprising. But regardless, the White Sox should get somebody pretty good at 5.
All right, so let's talk about who that player is going to be, somebody pretty good at 5. What's your dream scenario? Right now, it's hard to find any consensus. You hear about J.J. Weatherholt, Connor Griffin. He's a shortstop, or profiles a little bit as an outfielder. Jim Callis had a first baseman, Jack Caglione from Florida, at 5. What's your dream tomorrow, White Sox first round?
Yeah, so the dream scenario is one of Charlie Condon or Travis Savanna somehow prices themselves out of the top and they fall to 5 and you just take them and pay them the slot value. That would be great. But, I mean, the names most commonly mentioned, you said Connor Griffin is a high school shortstop center fielder out of Mississippi. Jack Caglione is a first baseman from Florida, big time, like, power guy. But again, like, that first base profile at 5, it's just, you know, it's a little bit frightening because you'd rather have a center fielder or a shortstop. And then J.J. Weatherholt is probably the other candidate, but he's got a real chance to go number 1. So I think anything they do there, I think the White Sox are probably going to save a little bit of money at 5. Their slot value is $7.7 million. My guess is they don't want to go to that number with anyone unless, like, Condon or Bizana fell, just so you can reinvest that money later. It's not being cheap. It's just, you know, if you have $600,000-$700,000 to add to your bonus pool at pick 43, you can get a $3 million player. That's the bonus pool, like, in the 20s. So you could theoretically get, you know, a top 25 player in the class to fall down to you at 43 in theory. I think that's the best case scenario, is to get a good player but also save money in that spot so you can spend more later.
Yeah, it's one of the more interesting factors of the MLB draft that it's not like necessarily the NFL or the NBA draft, where you kind of know based on the position we take this player, that's what they're going to be worth. You have the bonus pool. So it's one of those weird things almost to reframe for fans where you go, oh, they're saving money in the top 10 pick. Well, why are they doing that? It can actually help them in the later rounds in getting better talent because they have that leftover money. It's a great point by you. I'm talking with James Fox of Future Sox, managing editor. I just want to ask the importance of this. Is it so important because of where the Sox are in the rebuild, or is it so important because the competitive balance kind of rules in the draft limit how high the White Sox can pick next year?
Yeah, I think it's both. I think it's big. Like, I mean, look, even next year, like at 10, Mike Shirley's going to tell you they should get a really good player at 10.
Right.
And they get, you know, they'll most likely have the number one pick in every round after that. So that, you know, but yeah, no, I think it's big knowing how bad you are and knowing that you're not going to pick top 5 next year. Like, they have to get this one right. But I also think, like, they have a lot of flexibility. Like, you have 5 in the top 107, right? I just told you it's not a great draft class. Well, I mean, it's still their job to find the good players, right? There's good players to find. It's just not loaded with, you know, prep talent up the middle. So, yeah, no, I think it's both. I think this guy immediately is going to go right into their top prospect list, whoever it is. I mean, look, if it's Connor Griffin, you're a little bit further away. Rookie ball's over in about a week, so there's really nowhere for him to go play. That's kind of a long-term play. If it's Jack Caglione or J.J. Weatherholt, we could see him in Kannapolis in, like, 2 weeks from now, right? So it's just a totally different calculus.
I do have the question, if they go the Jack Caglione route, and that obviously taking a first baseman that high in the draft, it is not only frightening, the profile's fine, but the power hitting, it has to work. But what would it mean if they go that route with Andrew Vaughn on the major league roster?
Yeah, so Andrew Vaughn is like a sneaky trade candidate, in my opinion, just because he's getting to the point where, like, you have to think about, like, a non-tender potentially, like, if he doesn't improve. And he's been involved in trade rumors with teams. I don't think he really matters. I think if you take Jack Caglione, you know, it's just because you think he's the best guy. Now, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if they took Jack Caglione and announced him as an outfielder, and then they tried that. I know he was playing first base at Florida. I don't have, like, a ton of, I guess, like, I had no proof at all that he could play the outfield, but he's got a huge arm just because of, like, the pitching. He's played first base at Florida, supposedly, because he was also pitching and it was easier. So I wouldn't be surprised if they tried him in an outfield corner, even if he ends up at first. The other thing that's interesting, like, the White Sox apparently are okay with him also, like, attempting to pitch.
I was just going to ask.
I haven't really heard anybody else say that he can do that. I kind of heard, like, if you're going to take this guy, you just stick him at first and let him mash because you're buying the bat.
Is that just the enamor of the now, like, Shohei Ohtani has proven a two-way player can exist in Major League Baseball, so if we find one, we have to try it?
I guess so, but to me, like, I think there's one player on the planet that can do that, and right. You just mentioned him. You know what I mean?
It feels like he's the unicorn.
Yeah, like, can Cags, like, come in occasionally and come out of your bullpen, like, from the left side and just throw heat? I mean, maybe. Like, I don't think I would tell the kid no, like, if I was in their position. But, like, if you're taking him at five, he has to mash. And I've said this on our show and on other shows, and it's the Andrew Vaughn thing, right? Like, it's not fair to compare Jack Caglione to Andrew Vaughn and Spencer Torkelson and all these guys. But it is fair to compare him to the profile that has not worked that high in a draft. Because if you're first base only, you have to hit. You have to hit for power, or else you're kind of not really worth very much, which is what makes it frightening.
Any names that we haven't talked about yet that you're looking to a little interested in with the fifth pick tomorrow?
Yeah, so I really don't think they're looking pitcher, but I mean, if they took Chase Burns, I'd be like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. But there's just all the talk has been on position players. And then Bryce Rayner is a shortstop out of California, Harvard, Westlake. They've produced a lot of guys, including Max Fried, Lucas Giolito. You know, I was, like, kind of under the impression that if they went high school, it would be Connor Griffin. But I actually think Rayner's the best prep player in the class. So if they did that, I think that would be interesting, too.
You mentioned Chase Burns, the righty out of Wake Forest, also the lefty Hagen Smith out of Arkansas. Both have been kind of mentioned around the White Sox and things that I've read. I personally would be surprised if they took a pitcher. I don't know that it would be the wrong decision, but what would your reaction be if they went pitcher instead of bat tomorrow first round?
Well, so I actually have more confidence that, like, if they took the pitcher, they would develop him. Now, I understand, like, they really want to go bat because it's an area of weakness, and like, that does make a lot of sense, and I think they feel confident that they can take pitchers in rounds 2, 3, 4, that'll be pretty good. And, like, I agree with them. But, you know, like, these guys, Caglione has flaws, Griffin has flaws, right? Like, if you took Chase Burns, you get him to the big leagues really quickly, especially with the Brian Bannister thing, you know? Like, if they took one of those pitchers, I actually wouldn't mind. I understand why they want to go position player with a premium pick like this.
James Fox, a future Sox, thank you for joining us. We'll all be looking forward to what the White Sox do in the first round tomorrow.
All right, Shay, thanks for having me.
White Sox Weekly continues next. You're listening on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network.
Hey, golfers, it's Sylvie. I've been talking about it for years. Chicago Southland's finest golf course, The Sanctuary in New Lenox. The Sanctuary offers 18 holes of great golf on great course conditions. The track may be a challenge, but it's an easy drive from anywhere in Chicagoland. Now featuring a 20-bay heated top tracer range. Coming soon, a 30-station grass range with a putting green and short game area. Check out golfsanctuary.com for the best rates and book your tee time. You no longer need to find your golf sanctuary.
Hey, your buddy Tom Waddle, and I drive a Hawk. Find your next car at hawkauto.com. Choose from Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, Fiat, Subaru, Cadillac, Mazda, Volkswagen, and Nissan models, and a huge selection of pre-owned vehicles. Save with 0% financing for 72 months or make no payments for 90 days. Shop 13 brands at 9 convenient locations and find your next car at hawkauto.com. Drive what I drive. Drive a Hawk.
HawkAuto.com.
$13.89 per month per 1,000 financed on select models with approved credit. Hey, it's your friend Tom Waddle here. The team at Great Clips knows that we all live very full lives. It's the reason they're always coming up with new ways to make getting a great haircut easier. Take, for instance, online check-in. With online check-in, Great Clips works on your schedule. They have features that help you see where you are in line, get a ready next text so you know when to go to the salon, and a haircut reminder feature that reminds you that you haven't been in quite some time. Another feature I love is Clip Notes. They save your haircut details so you can get the same look you love from the skilled stylist each and every time. Now, look, I have no idea what I'm doing with my hair, okay? Who remembers what clipper setting or how long to leave it on the sides? You know who does that? Great Clips does, with Clip Notes. It's nice to be on the same page when it comes to your haircut. So even when you're not thinking about your next haircut, Great Clips is. And when you choose Great Clips, it's going to be great. Download their app today. And if you're interested, join a salon team. Visit jobs.greatclips.com.
It's White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network, and joining us now is Sox starting pitcher Eric Fetty, who's had an excellent first half of the season. Eric, thank you for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. So the first half of the season for you has been stellar. The ERA is spectacular. The outings have been really good. What are your impressions kind of from this first half of the year for you?
Yeah, a lot to be excited about. You know, I came in with, you know, high expectations of, you know, trying to put together a season like this. You know, it's one thing when it's actually happening, it's exciting. But, you know, just what I've tried to be is someone that, you know, the team can count on to go deep in games, give bullpen a break when it's my day to start. And I feel like for the most part, I've done a pretty good job of that.
You had kind of a lengthy career in Washington before eventually going to the Korean Baseball League. You pitched really well there. Was there anything that you worked on or changed in your approach, your day-to-day, even on a micro, in how you approach hitters while you were in Korea that you've brought back to the White Sox?
Yeah, I think it just goes back to, I guess, the arsenal. There in D.C., I felt like, for the most part, was kind of a two-pitch pitcher with also like a slower breaking ball that just wasn't really inducing swing and miss. Went over there, added the little bit harder sweeper, and then the changeup. And I think that's just kind of changed the whole way I've been able to attack hitters. You know, whether it's, you know, a power righty, a power lefty, whoever it might come up, I feel like I have the repertoire now to attack those guys with quality stuff.
You mentioned adding a more powerful sweeper. That was a huge change last year that was talked about a ton at the major league level. Was that something that you credit to a staff in Korea, or was that just a part of this is the evolution of baseball, this is where things are going from a pitching perspective, and it felt like you had to get on board?
That kind of came with the offseason after I was let go by the Nationals. I moved out to Arizona, went to like a pitching facility, was surrounded by, you know, a lot of great guys, a lot of other big leaguers, picking brains, picked up the sweeper grip from Shelby Miller, he's with the Tigers right now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just kind of worked with him. I'd always thrown a breaking ball that was pretty horizontal, but finding a grip that kind of leaned into that, and then it also added some velo, something I usually threw more around like the 78 mile per hour. I'm now throwing this year, you know, around 84, and still feeling like I get some quality movement out of it.
Something so fascinating to me, I would describe myself as a baseball nerd. I read a lot of the books about the way pitchers are developed now, and I read a lot of articles about it as well. You mentioned changing the grip. How micro of a change is that? Because I think fans think about, well, you grip it on the seams this way, or you change the grip, and it feels like a huge change sometimes. But a lot of times I'm reading this, and it's like, well, if you adjust two seams with your middle finger, then you'll get a totally different spin rate. How micro of an adjustment can it be?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, with all the technology we have now, the Edutronic that puts everything in slow-mo, how you can watch the ball come off your fingers. I know here with the Sox, we talk a lot about seam shift, and those are the kind of things, like how well can you catch that seam to create, you know, like the suction in the sense, or you know, the turnover. And yeah, it could literally be the difference of, you know, holding the ball deeper in your hand, moving your finger farther up or down the baseball. And yeah, it's gotten to the point, it's kind of crazy how nitpicky we can be. And also the realization that everybody has different hand, different wrist posture, different throwing mechanics, and finding that perfect grip that fits your style.
So when you made the decision to go to Korea, what were the factors in choosing that specifically? Where obviously maybe the offer wasn't there to remain here in America, but what led to your decision eventually to end up in Korea?
Yeah, we had a lot of what we call split deals, where I guess it's not really guaranteed big league 40-man spot, where you know, you have two different salaries, big leagues and minor leagues. And a lot of the teams said, like, you know, it looks like you'll most likely head to AAA and then try to win a spot. Just something that, you know, coming up through the minors, saw a lot of, where guys go there, pitch well, but maybe, you know, teams choose their young prospects over you. And just something that didn't really intrigue me that much. And then, you know, Korea offered me a chance to go there, know I was going to get the ball every fifth, sixth day, get a chance to prove I could throw, you know, 175 plus innings, and it's a place where I knew I could go work on my new stuff. So it was definitely something that was very intriguing and an attractive offer there. So obviously it worked out for the best.
Well, yeah, clearly it worked out for the best. Pitched incredibly well in the Korean League, and then have brought it here to the White Sox, where you've had this tremendous first half of the season. Talking with Eric Fetty, you've also had the opportunity to watch Garrett Crochet blossom into one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. What has it been like for you to see Garrett Crochet's development this season?
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. I think, you know, his just determination, just that mindset he had to start the year of, I'm going to be a starter, and just the perseverance he had to go through with that. I think when everyone maybe had their doubts, he hadn't thrown that many innings and this and that, he had everything what seemed stacked against him. And then next thing you know, we watch him in spring training and he's without a doubt our best pitcher and gets opening day, and just how much he's grown from that. He went through a rough patch early in the year and he made such great adjustments, you know, and has been, I mean, since, I don't know, the last 2 months has been probably what I'd say the best pitcher in the league. And, you know, it's been awesome to watch. It's been fun to cheer for him, and I'm lucky to be his teammate.
It's one thing I would say is true of both you and Garrett, that there have not every outing has been spectacular. The full season numbers look excellent, but the way that you've been able to adjust from some of the outings that haven't gone your way, what's been that process?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, we lean on each other as a staff to, you know, we watch each other the most out of, you know, probably most people in the league. We've had great support here with Katz and Bannister. You know, they've done such a good job of, you know, keeping us locked in. But yeah, I think we've had a lot of really good, like, I don't know, in a sense, in-game adjustments as well as in-between starts. I don't know, I guess personally I look back at starts like, say, I don't know, I went to Detroit the other day, or a couple starts ago, and it seemed like their game plan was just to, like, look at everything away, and just, you know, Kat saw that immediately and said, we need to pitch in harder this game. And after I gave up a couple runs in the first two innings, like, I think went, you know, four scoreless after that. And I think those are, like, the big things that people don't see but are what are important to having quality numbers.
Talking to Eric Fetty, the All-Star break coming up next week. If an opportunity arises, how exciting would it be for you to join Garrett Crochet as a member of the American League All-Star Game?
I mean, it'd be a dream come true. Of course, you know, I know just the storyline of, you know, being pretty much let go from baseball, and, you know, if I go to Korea and my career and I struggle, my career could be over, and then maybe finding my way back to that. But you know, there's obviously lots of guys that have had good seasons, hoping for the best, and that, you know, maybe I get that opportunity, but would love to go experience that.
A lot of players talk about the grind of a major league season, 162 games. It's a long season. If the opportunity doesn't arise, do you have some plans on how you're going to spend your time off?
Yeah, I'm going to go back home to Arizona, take a little breather, maybe get some pool time, just try to deload. You know, the team was gracious enough to give me not the first game back after the break. So, you know, it'll give me a little more time just to relax. But, yeah, it's definitely a long grind of a season. Got to have those moments where you can, you know, maybe not think about baseball for a little bit. So if that happens, then I'm definitely going to try to take advantage.
And you mentioned pool time. I don't know if you've spent a ton of time outside today. It is humid. Pool time sounds good to me right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's the perfect time of year for that.
Eric, before I let you go, you were in Korea full season. Did you have a favorite food that you discovered when you went over there?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Korean barbecue is phenomenal. You can't go wrong with that. But I had a really good liking to what they call shabu shabu. It's like a hot pot, I guess. You know, you get like a nice broth with a little cooker in front of you, and then you get like your veggies and your meat, and you can put it in exactly how you like it, and almost make your own little stew. And that was something I found myself eating quite a lot there.
Have you had any of the Korean barbecue in Chicago? I've gone out to some of the places with my friends. I think they're excellent, but I wonder if they're authentic. You'd be as good a resource to ask as anybody.
Yeah, you know what? I need to make – I haven't yet. I think the last time I did was in spring training at Koreatown in Arizona. But I need to find my way out there. Maybe I'll have to take some recommendations from you.
I can get in touch with you. I'll let you know some of the spots I've been to. We'll see if they match up to what you had in actually Korea.
Perfect.
Eric, thank you so much for taking some time to join us today.
All right, thanks for having me.
That's White Sox starter Eric Fetty. He's been excellent and deserving of an American League All-Star spot should an opportunity arise. The ERA at 2.99 in 111 innings. This has been by far the best season that Eric Fetty has had as a professional pitcher in the major leagues. And he talked about it, working on that sweeper and getting a little more power on the breaking ball while he was over in Korea has made the difference. It's funny that it's so universal, pitching, and the ability to choose to go someplace where you know you're going to get the ball. And yeah, you have to go to a foreign country and you have to go to a different place, but it's an opportunity to take what he was working on at a facility in Arizona and learning from major league pitchers and grip adjustments and all of the little electronic stuff, the new technology that has come into play in Major League Baseball to make pitchers 1%, 2% better and overwhelm hitters, and having the opportunity to go to a different league in a different country and work on those things consistently has led to what has been an all-star deserving season, whether the opportunity arises or not. I don't think anyone would argue against the fact Eric Fetty has had an all-star caliber season as a starting pitcher for the White Sox. 7-3 record, 2.9 ERA, sub-3. Anytime you get there, you're in a really good place. And it just speaks again to how well the White Sox have been able to find and help develop starting pitching talent. Fetty at 31 is not old, not young anymore, but to bring him in and continue that development with those added pitches and work on things to the extent that you now have a guy who's performing near the top of all starters in Major League Baseball, couple that with what you've done with Garrett Crochet, and there's a lot of promise. This staff that Ethan Katz has built in developing pitchers, we've seen it before and we're seeing it this year. And it's tough with what this year is. We had an idea of where the White Sox would be. We knew they weren't going to be a contending ball club. But the bright side is they've maximized the output and certainly the value of a lot of these players that they have brought in and also given opportunities. You think about Eric Fetty saying the only opportunities available to him were those as a AAA veteran, and he saw how it had gone for some of those guys in his career in baseball. The White Sox were able to give him an opportunity to be in the rotation right away, and he shined. It's the same deal with Garrett Crochet, a guy who said, I'm going to be a starting pitcher. The White Sox afforded that opportunity. Many teams maybe wouldn't. And the result is one of the best pitchers, not only in the American League, but in all of baseball in the form of Garrett Crochet. White Sox Weekly continues next. This, you're listening to the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network. We'll be right back. White Sox Weekly continues on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network. Shane Orling in for Connor McKnight today. Connor will have the call of the game coming up 1 o'clock. Pregame today, 12:30. I will be your pregame host. Connor with Len Casper today on the call of the game. First pitch, 1:10, White Sox Pirates game 2 of the series before all of Major League Baseball has some time off for the All-Star break. You can celebrate National Hot Dog Month by entering the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to create your own hot dog, presented by Vienna Beef. July's winner will work with the Chicago White Sox head chef to create and name their own hot dog that will be sold in stadium. Enter at whitesox.com/sweepstakes. Name your own hot dog is a great bit. I would love to somehow know what some of the names are that have been entered so far, and I can't wait to find out what the winner will be in naming their own hot dog that will be sold in stadium. Speaking of selling, the MLB trade deadline is coming up, and if you're looking for clear sellers in the trade deadline market, it might be hard to find, especially if you're looking in the National League, where the entire league is incredibly bunched up. Now, just for context, the American League is a little more, there's some more clarity. The Astros, first team out, game and a half back. Tampa Bay, 4.5 games back, sitting at 47-47. And then you have a little bit of a gap. Tigers, Rangers, both 7.5 games out, few teams double digits. But in the National League, basically the entire league is in contention for that final wild card spot. Major League Baseball expanded the playoffs, 3 wild card teams now, and it has led to what could be an incredibly captivating trade deadline with teams like the Cubs, the Reds, the Giants, the Pirates, who the Sox play today at the rate, the Padres, all still in the hunt. Padres, Diamondbacks, both just 1 game out. The rest of those teams all below 500, but no more than 3 games back. All of them could have convincing arguments to be buyers. And why does that impact you, a White Sox fan? Well, because you are one of the, and this isn't said to be disrespectful, it's the nature of the game, one of the more clear sellers as we enter the deadline. Now, whether or not Luis Robert Jr. and Garrett Crochet, to wildly mentioned names on the market, and 2 of the players who would certainly be the best available on the market, I don't think there's any argument, really. You can gripe about Luis Robert Jr.'s availability. Injuries have been an issue for him, but there is no doubt that were he on the market, he would be the most talented bat available at the trade deadline. Similarly, there's no doubt that if Garrett Crochet were on the market, he would be the most talented pitcher available at the trade deadline. Feels like consecutive seasons now where the White Sox have fit this bill of being a rather clear seller at the deadline and also having the advantage of possessing the 2 most talented guys. And you go beyond those 2. Eric Fetty could be an option for teams to look at. He's been outstanding this season as the White Sox have continued their track record of finding and developing major league level pitching. Michael Kopech is also being named in a lot of these trade deadline pieces as a potential target. And it's been maybe not consistent, but when Michael Kopech is right, he's as good of an arm as you will find out of a bullpen. We saw it the other day with the immaculate inning, the first in 101 years for the White Sox. 9 pitches, 9 strikes to end a game. A very impressive outing from Michael Kopech, a guy who can live in triple digits with the fastball, who can overpower hitters. That is an attractive arm. But I can't stress enough how well Chris Getz has done in terms of low-risk acquisitions like Tommy Pham or like Eric Fetty and finding ways to maximize the value. And you think about a team being willing to provide innings for pitchers and at-bats for hitters. Tommy Pham, a guy who struggled to find a market for himself in free agency this past offseason, winds up here in Chicago gets a deal that he was looking for and has maximized it in terms of performance on the field, there are a number of teams that could be interested in adding a bat like Tommy Pham on a one-year deal, getting moved to a team chasing a pennant. You think about National League teams towards the top, the Phillies, the Braves, the Dodgers, all three need a little bit of consistent outfield help. Pham, kind of utility fit. The Braves, obviously, in the wake of Ronald Acuna's injury, they need help in center field. The Phillies absolutely need help in center field. And neither team has been a stranger to making moves to help assist them getting over the hump and getting into that pennant chase more firmly. The Phillies, you almost laugh, they're playing like the best team in baseball right now. They have, for much of the first half of this season, been of that caliber. What help could they possibly need? But I look at their general manager, a guy who spent time in Detroit and in Boston, and at both of those stops, Dave Dombrowski made a clear decision that to hell with the farm system. We don't really care how talented a player is in our farm system. The best way for those players to help us is becoming major league players, and not in the sense of developing them into them, but turning them into it via a transaction. And that was the process in Detroit for many years. It was the process in Boston for many years for Dave Dombrowski. It's hard to imagine that process is going to change significantly now that Dombrowski's in Philadelphia with a chance to chase a pennant. He's a guy who will gut the top of a farm system for a chance to win right now, and Pham could afford that. Luis Robert could afford that for the Phillies. The price the White Sox would ask for, I think, in a Robert or Crochet deal would be massively expensive. But when you look at some of the better farm systems, Philadelphia at the top, it's a bit top heavy, but at the top has players who are attractive. Baltimore, in need of starting pitching help, has players that would be attractive. The New York Yankees, a team that needs starting pitching help, in fact, you could argue is dying for starting pitching help, as they've hit a brutal slump in the month of July. They haven't been able to find their way into a win, could get a little desperate. Their general manager, Brian Cashman, the other day said, this has gone on long enough. The point I'm making to you is, being a seller as a fan doesn't always feel good. When you're at the deadline and you know some of these guys who have been impact additions for the White Sox may not be long-term mainstays, you think of guys like Tommy Pham or even a Gavin Sheets who have been impactful this season, and Sheets slowing down a bit lately, but that April with an 860 OPS in that month showcased he can be an impact bat. You're going to get things back. And talking with Connor McKnight in our last hour, I'm enamored by the idea of prying some of the prospect talent from the Baltimore Orioles. It's a loaded farm system. They've done an incredible job of building it. They've hit consistently with their draft picks. Guys like Gunnar Henderson, Heston Kjerstad, who was a part of the benches clearing brawl yesterday between the Yankees and the Orioles, has been a high-level prospect. You probably don't come away with a guy like Jackson Holliday, who received a bit of a fast track as the Orioles' top prospect, but there are more names in that farm system, Samuel Basalo, guys who can help you long-term, many of them bats, which is incredibly important if you're trying to rebuild this farm system, and it looks like Chris Getz is, by leveraging some of those lower-risk additions and turning them into the future of the Chicago White Sox as we look forward to this team eventually being a playoff-caliber team and having another long window of contention. The way you can do it is supplementing your farm system with bats from other teams. I think the White Sox have put themselves in as good of a position to do that as possible. Now, whether or not they choose this deadline to be the time where they move Garrett Crochet or Luis Robert, Connor is more of the mind that they'll wait until this offseason. But I think when you look at how crunched the National League is and how desperate some of these teams, and you don't have to look a lot further for me than the team that occupies the first base dugout today at the rate, the Pittsburgh Pirates, they have found money in the name of Paul Skeens. He might be, as a rookie, with many years of control on for the team, he might be the best pitcher in baseball. And to have a player like that, cost-controlled, young, rookie pitcher, already potentially the best starting pitcher in all of baseball, could that add on to a little bit of that desperation when you're just three games out of the playoffs and you have an opportunity? I would challenge anyone. If you're an opposing team and you have to see the Pirates in October, are you going to be excited to stare down the barrel of Paul Skeens and multiple starting pitchers who will overpower with velocity and high-level fastballs? Is that going to be an exciting place for you to be as an opposing team if you have to stare down the barrel of the Pittsburgh Pirates? If you're a team like the Cubs, one of the better starting rotations in baseball, but they've struggled so mightily for much of this season, it just adds on to so many of these teams that have high-level pitching rotations or three reliable starters or a nasty bullpen. Is that enough as a team for you to look at this if you're in the National League and go, boy, we have something we can build off of. Maybe it is time to overpay and get a little desperate and go and make a run at somebody like Garrett Crochet. Make that Godfather offer, the deal that Chris Getz can't refuse in supplementing the farm system, where maybe this farm system goes from being ranked in the bottom third to the top third in one fell swoop. That is an attractive opportunity if you're a general manager, and I think Chris Getz has played his cards brilliantly. Whether he chooses to play them all at this deadline or wait until the winter meetings or the offseason to do more of the impactful stuff, we'll have to wait and see. But we might be able to get a little more information in that regard. We'll hear from Mike Shirley, the White Sox amateur scouting director. He spoke about the upcoming draft starting tomorrow, the Major League Baseball draft. You'll hear that next on White Sox Weekly. But first, I want to tell you about the Sox Family Pack. Sox fans, bring your family to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil, starting at just $19. Each family member gets one ticket, hot dog, a drink, a bag of chips, and a cookie. For tickets, go to whitesox.com/family. The White Sox Weekly continues next on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network.
Ready for fall semester and save up to 30% on select items.
Wow, perfect timing. I need to get my kids' space ready without breaking my budget.
Oh, how about offers on comfy furniture, clever storage, and stylish decor?
Ooh, sign me up.
Visit us in-store from July 10th to July 23rd or at ikea-usa.com/ready-for-college for more details. Offer valid dates may vary. U.S. only while supplies last. Selection may vary by store and online. See store on ikea-usa.com/ready-for-college for complete terms. Restrictions apply.
This is a Bears town. We worship great defense. We appreciate frigid temperatures.
When our 11 are battling their 11 on the lakefront in January.
We love a helmet with a chunk of fresh turf lodged in it. This is a Bears town. And we are the new home of the Bears. ESPN Chicago.
Calling all Chicago car drivers. Experience automotive excellence like never before with Bill Jacobs Auto Group. Our service centers in Naperville and Hinsdale are here for all of your automotive needs. We've been proudly serving the greater Chicago area since 1955, always putting the customer first. Whether you're in the market for a new set of wheels or need expert maintenance, we are here to exceed your expectations. Visit Bill Jacobs Auto Group today and discover why the cars bring you in and the experience brings you back.
Your company can save money by becoming more energy efficient. In fact, the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program can help your business find up to 35% in energy savings, resulting in lower energy costs. At ComEd, we're not just moving toward a clean energy future. We're powering the future of your business. Sign up for your free facility assessment at ComEd.com/poweringbiz. Terms and conditions apply. Offers are subject to change. Actual savings will vary by customer's usage and rate. The ComEd Energy Efficiency Program is funded in compliance with state law.
White Sox Weekly continues on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network. Join us at the ballpark on Saturday, July 27th, as the White Sox take on the Mariners, 6:15 p.m. The first 20,000 fans will receive a Chicago short-sleeve hoodie presented by Coke Zero Sugar. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. The MLB draft coming up tomorrow. White Sox have the fifth pick. It's been called pivotal by Mike Shirley, the White Sox director of amateur scouting. He spoke yesterday on the upcoming draft. You will hear that now. Also, we have to pause 10 seconds for station identification.
Mike, you have a 5 in the first 107, I think it is, right?
That's correct, yeah. Excited about that.
Is it, as I say, exciting, challenging, all the above?
It's all the above. Yeah. Exciting, challenging. Pick 5 is the most important piece. You got to get the first one right. It's a pivotal moment for the organization. You guys all know where we're at. I think it's a good moment for us. Staff's work extremely hard. There's a good blend of high school players in this group, a good blend of college position players, and most importantly, still two college pitchers involved in the process. So we're excited, working hard. We still have no view who even may get the 5 at this point. So we are working hard, multiple directions, but we understand what 5 means to us. So
what is the overall talent pool like in this draft? Is there?
I think when you look at the first round, everybody's always going to gauge the draft by the first round. I still look, when I look at the draft board, I see 12 to 15 really good players that can define a draft that are going to be worthy of being first rounders. I do think there's a little bit of fall off once you get past the top 15, where if you're picking up the bottom of the first round, that can get a little bit cloudy for you. So I do think that's interesting, but I do think there's 12 to 15 really good players in this draft.
Fans might look at the team and the state of the team in the minor leagues and think you need to pick a certain position. What do you guys look at in terms of what you want with that number 5 pick?
I think it's always important you know where your organization stands. I mean, you have to know where your strengths and weaknesses lie, what you're really good at development, what you feel good about. But I don't think you draft, I don't think anyone draft defines a major league team, nor should you draft based off what your major league team needs. I think you have to be prepared in multiple directions. We still, even at pick 5, we have no idea who's going to go 1. So we are still working on 10 players up there significantly to get ready for this. The financial aspect of how the pool works in the draft is important. I do think there's some equivalency in the first 10 players of the draft. And personally, I don't see a bunch of separation. I do think you have to work on about 10 players and what's the value of a guy who you think is equivalent, who may be $1 million cheaper, who you could possibly get a deal with. This is something we're really working hard at. So,
a lot of people have said this is the year for college position players. Do you see it like that?
I do see that. There are some really good college position players. I think it's really important to understand where amateur baseball's gone. The SEC, the big conferences, they've invested in baseball significantly. The training model, how they've invested in the athlete, it's starting to produce revenues. And so they've invested in these players. And these players are more developed than they've ever been at the college level. But it's tricky. I think all the mock drafts, all the things that are going on, the performance at the college level may be a touch inflated. So I do think that that's gotten in the way of everybody. Everybody sees all the large home run numbers. Our job is to weed through that and make a quality decision on the depth of this draft, which is the college position players.
Is it easier, Mike, to be able to determine what a pitcher may be rather than I know the injury factor comes into play there a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
But when you look at him and you go, he's hitting with a metal bat, it's so hard to hit in Major League Baseball now. How do we really project this?
I still think for me, the biggest challenge for me, the part that I love is the mechanical aspect of evaluating hitters, right? So I always feel good about how the operation works. What is the effort level of the operation on the hitter? Most importantly, is he a contact guy? Is he a power guy? What are you chasing out of the profile? What are you trying to acquire with the profile? At 5, obviously, we're trying to get a hit and a power tool, both involved, with great swing decisions and strike zone management. That's always going to be the most difficult part of the draft. But I think there are candidates up there that touch all those spaces for us. And I think we'll have a choice of some of these really good players. But your first question on the pitching, yeah, sometimes you feel more secure what the college pitcher is doing at the moment that can translate. And I think the two famous names are Hagen Smith and Chase Burns. If you look at those young pitchers, it's big-time stuff. They have a chance to move here quickly. They're going to help a major league club more rapidly. And why, you know, there's a part of how long would you want to leave him in the minor leagues anyway? I think the Paul Skeens effect is interesting, what's happening going on in the game today. You saw rapidly he's made an impact for a club. Both these guys both touch some significant points in terms of their stuff. Both have two secondary weapons that are, I mean, both their sliders, both Chase and Hagen have wipeout sliders that are interesting.
So the crochet path might have been different if it wasn't for COVID, right? I mean, that could have been quickly, we're going to make him a starter, right? I mean
that's a great point for the scouting staff as a whole. I think Garrett, we always thought Garrett was a starter from a scouting standpoint. I've said this in previous teams. When Garrett was a young man, he was a strike thrower. I mean, he didn't have stuff. He learned how to pitch before he had the stuff. As the stuff came along, he could always revert back to the skill set of putting the ball in the zone. And I think what Garrett's been able to do for this organization this year in a given opportunity, it says who we thought Garrett was. And most importantly, Garrett really invested in himself. We're close. I'm proud of him. It's a great moment for the White Sox, for the scouting staff, for everyone that invested in Garrett and believed in him. So it's a good moment.
Could you go pitcher at five, or do you think it's going to be a position player?
Still wide open. I mean, when I tell you we're looking at 10 players, we are still up there working hard at 10 players, and both those two pitchers do matter to us, and we were looking hard at both those pitchers.
Factor in where the organization's at. When you drafted Garrett as a win-now team, he winds up helping it right away, knowing that's can you take a longer development project with where the organization's at right now?
I think so. You have to take the best player who you think all those things add up. I do think that. But I also think, what's a longer development path at five? I think even if we chose to go the high school route, you anticipate those guys being here in like three and a half years. It's not as long as you, like as it used to be, it's going to take five. I think you, even on the high school player, you want them to move fast. I mean, I think you look at Colson was old when we took him. Colson's a really good player. And I think how fast he's got the AAA, how fast he expedited his career, these guys can come quickly on you. So I don't, and I've told you all along, I love high school players. My favorite part of the job, I think they can get here quicker than today because all the development training that goes on in younger ages, they're more developed than they used to be.
How is the dynamic different for you this time now, Mike, with a new general manager? And, the fact that every personality is different, everybody has a different type of voice for a scouting director. How's this different for you?
Well, Chris, I mean, obviously I've known Chris Goetz for a long time. It's a relationship that we both trust each other. Chris wants to get this organization right. And he is investing so much into the process of building an organization that you don't all get to see every day. That's in scouting, that's in development, that's in our Latin operations. He's taking the broad spectrum of being a general manager, investing in the totality of the organization. He is fully invested in the draft. He's been a tremendous leader taking the job, putting us all departments in the right direction. You may not see the output at the major league level right now. He's investing in all departments with his time, effort, and energy to build this place from the ground up. And that's important. And look, now I'm so gracious to the people that were here before Kristen give me a chance to do this. And those guys, a ton of respect for them and graciousness for them for the opportunity they gave me.
So is it still a fist fight?
Fist fight in the room?
Yeah,
it gets tough on there. You get emotional. People who invest their lives in it, it can get challenging up in that room, as it should, right?
Right.
People should want to fight for what they believe in, stand up. That's how you build conviction in players. That's also how you challenge each other as a staff, both data analytics, performance, what we like to call research and development today, and then pure evaluation. We're doing all that up there.
Does number 68 help you guys, adding that in?
I think it helps. It can help at 43, too. What if we think there's a significant piece to pay a little bit more for at 43? Gives you a little bit more capital to spend. But we're trying to get as many great shots on goal as we can. How many more additional pieces can we add to a puzzle to make a difference? We got to build tomorrow. Our job is to build tomorrow and keep investing in tomorrow so we're good and get out of some of the space we're in right now.
So it really is like a puzzle for you guys. I mean, you look at all of them and you try to
put
yeah,
the
we're
money
trying.
In
it. Yeah, we're trying. You know, and that's what I mean about what five can mean for you. I look at like last year, you know, what George Walkow is doing right now. We only get him because Jacob Gonzalez became, we had a little space there. So we invested in Jacob cheap at a discounted rate in some ways to get to buy what George is becoming or what's happening now. That is the way you have to be prepared to do this, you know. And Jerry's been great. Jerry Reinsdorf has been great in about giving us the, you know, you get a 5% overage. Jerry's invested in the club that way. He's never been afraid to put his dollars where we – and he's been truly supportive of us building a better DeMar. So.
Last thing you take, Jacob, you know, he goes through – he struggles with Canapolis at first, yeah. But he goes through biomechanical analysis, cleans up some stuff in his leg drive, and, you know, takes off. Do you factor that in with some of the projects here of, like, hey, we can make a fix here?
I think it's part of the job.
Kind of gripping that way.
I think it's part of the job in terms of what we thought Jacob could become. We didn't think that was the finished product. And, you know, we got touched a lot. Oh, how did you take Jacob? Well, we believed in what Jacob could become, not what he was. And we knew what an intelligent baseball player he was and how competitive he was. He wasn't part of a national championship team. He wasn't the starter of Team USA. He hadn't accomplished so many things in life without being extremely competitive and having a straight skill set and mindset for the game of baseball. And I think we're starting to see that. I mean, you have to – this is not as perfect as it needs to be. He's one of the better performers of that draft class right now. And we're proud of that for Jacob.
What sort of opportunity is this at five for the organization to add another, like, top-of-the-line guy, like some of the guys that folks are seeing in the minor leagues?
It's pivotal. I mean, it's pivotal right now. I think we all feel good what's happening in the minor leagues. To add this piece of what five could possibly be to the next wave of this is substantial. It's a must. I understand where we're at. I think the security has asked me this is a pivotal. All the way to Pedro has told me it's pivotal. Jerry's told me it's pivotal. We all know how pivotal this is to get this right.
So. Is there any more pressure because of the new funky way this thing works? And next year, the highest you can pick is 10.
It's out of our control.
I know, but there is, you know, it's a reality that you have to look at.
I mean, you have to be realistic, but I mean, hopefully there's 10 good players in the draft next year. I mean, I think at the end of the day, we know where we're picking next year. Probably will be 10. You hope there's 10 good players. That process has already started about looking at next year's draft and getting right. Yeah, it's not fair, but it's out of our control. Get five right, get 10 right, get every pick right, get every draft right.
That's still a chance to add a really good player, though, right? I mean, it's someone like Garrett is showing it doesn't have to be a top five selection.
You have to be. The job is to be good at wherever you pick. We all know what the Major League Baseball draft is. It's a challenge. But that group upstairs, the people on our staff, the support of management, the support of ownership, it's our job to get it right. We'll get it right. We'll work hard to do that.
You see a guy like Walco go on a tear like this so young. You have to be careful not to get too excited about it, or how do you tell him? How do you deal with what he's going through?
Well, first off, what success can do for a young player, it can pave the road for him to keep driving a car. You can never discount what success means. You start tapping into it, you realize, what did I accomplish? What am I able to do? I think George has got the mindset. It's extremely mature. I think that George has a chance to be a significant player. There's still a learning curve that's going to happen. But we gave that kid, we invested in George because we believed he was capable of doing some of the things that he is showing you.
So we had Caglianone, is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah, Jack Caglianone.
Yeah, in here. Yeah. And obviously you've had other ones in here. But if he fell to you at five and you decided to take him, if it worked out, could he do both? Could he?
Yeah, I think there's a part of we're investigating whether it can be a two-way player. I think we'd be foolish not to do that. He's done it his whole life. His baseball acumen, his baseball repertoire has been built being a two-way player. I think that's something we will continue to look at and see if that's best. But obviously we prefer the bat over the pitching. But remember, if he could throw once or twice a week to save his staff, stretch his staff, that could be beneficial to the club.
That's possible for like a young guy coming up to do that?
Jack thinks it's possible. He was clearly stated he thinks he can do it. I think we'll investigate every avenue to make sure that's an opportunity we could capitalize on.
So, feeling good about that Noah Schultz pick right now?
Future game, him and Colson going to future game, that's awesome. Local kid, hoping he fills seats up. People want to come see him pitch. He's a real piece. think the first time I saw him pitch, he's like 15 or 16. That breaking ball he's got that lands in the strike zone all the time, it's a weapon. We're excited about what Noah's going to become. He's a real part of our future.
As the combine's been going a few years now, how has it kind of expanded into the role it plays in your draft process?
Well, I think the experience of it is important. You start to understand what strength and conditioning, the data analysis on some of the non-baseball activities, what the athlete can, what you can capture, and some of their movement patterns. The interviews are the most important piece. Diving into the player, putting in every player through the equivalency of the interview process where everybody's on the same page, learning more, having the time to invest with those players is critical. That's still the most important piece, and it's been awesome. It's been great for us.
The system is strong in pitching, and also it seems like position players have been a little hard to pry in their trades. Even beyond number five, you have to factor in a little bit in terms of building that out.
Our preference is position players at this point, just because I think that's something we're looking hard at. But I mean, we'll see. I think you got to keep adding to the arms. You can never have enough arms, so I think that's something you got to continue to invest in. We do a huge historical dive on the draft. Where do position players come from? What rounds do they come from? Where can you capture them? We're always aware of what the historical value of the draft means. You have to look at all these contexts as where you can get value. So we're working our ass off on that part. So
I know this guy, he didn't draft. This is the guy, I'm sorry, do you want to have a
follow-up? No, go ahead.
I was going to say, this is the guy you didn't draft, but Riley Gallins. Like, he's a guy who didn't have his eye-popping college stats.
Right.
But he's moving up with you guys. How would you...
That's a great piece of the trade we got from Atlanta. I think he's surprising and keep developing his skill set. I mean, to be determined, but he has made a lot of traction. And sometimes, remember, when you change organizations, you get a fresh face, you're wanted. Sometimes your trade, you think your values goes up because mentally, hey, this team wants me. It expedites careers. Guys get moving forward. He's done a nice job for us. Another good piece of a pitching puzzle that's growing for us rapidly. So
it was White Sox Director of Amateur Scouting Mike Shirley ahead of tomorrow's pivotal MLB draft, White Sox picking fifth in tomorrow's draft. White Sox Weekly continues next on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network. White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network. Pregame coming up about 7 minutes. It'll take you to the call of the game with Len Casper and Connor McKnight. At 1 o'clock, first pitch, 1:10, as the White Sox get set to take on the Pittsburgh Pirates. Game 2 of a weekend series ahead of the Major League Baseball All-Star break. Sox fans receive up to 40% off a 20-person suite on select games with our Summer Suite Flash Sale. Enjoy a game day tailored to you and your guests with customizable food and beverage options, parking, and more. Don't wait. Offer ends July 19th. For more information and to purchase your suite, visit whitesox.com/flash sale. All-Star break coming up, and just another congratulations to Garrett Crochet on being selected. We still await an official call on who will be the starter in that game for the American League. A few contenders for that spot, and Crochet among them. But Corbin Burnes, the Orioles ace, who's been fantastic this season, a Cy Young Award contender, and Tarek Skubal, the current Cy Young favorite, depending on where you shop, could almost look prohibitive, the ace of the Detroit Tigers. Those obviously will be two of the names in contention to start the All-Star game. Crochet not quite as high on the odds boards as those two for the American League Cy Young Award, but that might just be because the trade deadline's coming up and there are broad questions nationally and big picture if Garrett Crochet will be in the American League. Because if you look at any of the numbers, they would suggest over the full season, Garrett Crochet has been the best pitcher in Major League Baseball. Typically, a guy like that would be the favorite for the Cy Young. So in my estimation, the reason he's not spoken of with Burnes and Skubal among those favorites in the American League is simply because the question remains, will he be in the American League? If on August 1st he's still pitching as well as he is right now, and he's still on the White Sox, you may be looking at a potential Cy Young winner in Garrett Crochet. He was great last night, 2 innings, 4 strikeouts, no hits, no walks, preserving that arm for the upcoming All-Star game. This has been the White Sox Weekly. Pregame show starts next on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Radio Network.